Welcome to the Punk and Pile Drivers Podcast here on the Backbreaker Media Network. And now, your host, Big Bad Boris.
It is time for another edition of the Punk and Pile Drivers Podcast on the Backbreaker Media Network. I, of course, am your faithful servant, Big Bad Boris, and I know I say every week that I'm joined by one of my favorite people, but this time I mean it extra specially as I'm joined by one of my favorite people, Sheik Akbar Shabazz. Sheiky baby, thanks for hanging out with me, man. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
There's that charisma that we've come to know and love.
Well, what do you want me to say? You ain't got to lie to me, Boris.
I thought you'd start telling me what a dirty pig I am, donkey in the back, and all that fun stuff.
Normally I would, but I thought I'd be nice for a change.
All right. Excellent. All right. So we're going to start. I'd like to ask people kind of where they got bit by that wrestling bug that we've all kind of been bitten by at various times in our life. Do you remember when you first kind of started seeing it and where you got bit by it and you were like, this might be something I want to do?
Well, yeah, my first anything with wrestling, I was like, I could barely remember this, but I was a little kid and my dad took me to a show that was in my old high school back in, at the time it wasn't my high school because I was a kid, but like it was called HW Pickup High School. Ooh. And in the gym, there was this wrestling thing going on and my dad took me, and all I remember is this little guy with a mask, and he would, you know, he came to the ring, jumped on the turnbuckle, threw his arms in the air and started headbanging, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. And then I seen this other dude come out who was this big, heavier set, fat kind of guy. And I was like, wow, like this guy's supposed to fight him. Like, good luck. And that was the first memory I had of wrestling. And then it was kind of, I was flipping through the channels one day with my little brother and I seen it. And I was like, oh, this is the stuff my dad took me to.
Did you ever try to figure out what promotion that was or what company that was or anything like that?
I don't know for sure because there wasn't too many going around back then that I can remember.
Like what year are we talking about here?
Oh, God. Probably the late 80s.
Oh, that, okay, long time ago.
Yeah. So like, you know, I don't know if it is or not, but like I know Stampede did do shows in that area of Drayton Valley and whatever. Mm-hmm. But it could have been anybody, but I'm not entirely sure.
Late 80s, maybe like Rocky Mountain Wrestling. I know there was a company that was around kind of after Stampede went away, so it could have been that too. Interesting.
Yeah.
When did you decide that you wanted to start training?
Oddly enough, when I moved to the city, I was working downtown. And Michael Fitzpatrick there would always come by and visit his roommate.
I think actually he told me about this when I had him on, now that you mentioned it.
Yeah, and I'd work with this roommate, and then we'd talk about wrestling all the time. And then, like, you know, I was doing security at a shopping mall. And at nighttime, he would come, and he would take me to the back hallways, and he'd show me how to lock up and do a bunch of stuff. So we were doing it, and then he was like telling me how awesome it would be if he could take me to the training building and show me how to do more.
Okay.
So then I was like, well, I mean, I'll do it, kind of half jokingly, because I didn't think he was serious. And then it's funny because like the next day Kurt Sorokin came to visit Patrick at the mall, and I was up on a ladder doing something, and Pat, I could hear Pat, and he points to me, and he's like, oh yeah, this guy, he wants to train. Kurt kind of brushed it off and looked at me like, yeah, I'm sure he does. You know what I mean? And so then, he told me to meet him at a building, which is the old Extreme Zone, which I live across the street from now.
Yeah. I remember the old Extreme Zone.
Yeah. Which is now my cousin's dental shop.
And I was going to say, it's torn down now. It tore down a couple years ago.
Yeah, they tore it down a couple years ago when they developed the area, and now there's like, My cousin has a dental shop there, and there's a liquor store and a bunch of other stuff. But yeah, so I went there, and there was a training class going on. Tex Gaines was teaching everybody. And there was, you know, like JD Michaels was there. He just was coming back from a shoulder injury. And
that's Brady a name Roberts. I haven't heard in a long time.
Yeah. And then Brady Roberts was there. Curtis Wilson, I think Drago, you know, mm-hmm. Greg Donaldson. And just a bunch of other little trainees were there. And we did it. And I came with another guy that I worked with who would shoot his mouth off about like how great of a high school wrestler he was.
Oh, okay.
And so I think, I don't know if it was just because I was with them or I was just a new guy, but yeah, they beat the hell out of us.
And what made you come back? Like, did you
I had a lot of
the hell beat out of you?
Well, it was just, I like wrestling, right? Mm. I just never thought I would ever be in a wrestling ring or anything. So I was like, once I felt better, which was probably like 2 weeks later, I kept coming. And like Tex Gaines, he's like, what do you want, a hard or a fast suplex? And I was like, well, I don't want a hard one, so I'll take a fast one.
Dummy.
And, well, I mean, this is my first day, right? And I wore these, I can't remember, they were like some kind of Nike shoes or whatever. And he suplexed me so hard and fast that, like, I've never been suplexed so hard or fast in my life. The bottom of my feet were imprinted, rubber scuff marks on the mat, like, perfectly of the outline of my tread on my shoes.
There you go.
And my ankles hurt so bad, I thought I broke both my ankles.
Good times, right?
It was, yeah. And then Tex was like, hey, you think you can do this full time? And I was like, yeah, maybe. And I just kept coming and never stopped.
Now, one of the things I think is really cool about you is your family is all very, very close. I know you're close to your sisters and your brother and your mom and dad. What did your mom and dad, especially your dad, what did old Money Mo think of you deciding to go do this?
My mom hated it.
Still does?
Like my mom worries about everything, like every mother should, you know, care for mm-hmm. her children.
Yeah.
But like, she is scared as soon as I leave the house or I'm going to cross the street. She just thinks the worst things are going to happen to me. So to get into wrestling, I mean, I don't think any of them were surprised, but my mom didn't like it. I remember my dad, he asked me, he's like, there's no better hobby you want to do? And I was like, nope. And he was like, okay.
Has your mom ever come to a show?
They came once a long, long time ago when we wrestled at the casino here in Edmonton.
Okay, my mind's jumping all over the place about things that I want to ask you about. The first time that I remember you being around PWA, you were doing security. Is that like while you were training?
No, this was actually before, because like Patrick was telling me that they needed a couple guys. So it was me, this other dude, and his friend came and just did security for the shows. And at the time, they didn't have the training building at the Extreme Zone. They were somewhere else, and then I just, you know, came for a couple shows and was training here and there. But once they got the building here at the Extreme Zone, and after I was feeling better, I kept coming, and they had different teachers and different people would show up every now and then. But yeah, I did everything. I did security, I did concession, I made hamburgers. I mopped.
Well, you do have a lot of hamburger making experience, though, right?
Well, yeah. And then, you know, like I've mopped, you know, like, well, it's part of the job, but you know, you mop blood off the floor till 3-4 in the morning and just do whatever, you know. So
you paid your dues.
I feel like I have.
You paid the cost to be the boss.
Maybe more than others, I feel.
I'm going to pull back a little bit of kayfabe here. Now everybody knows that, or most people know that your name is Nizar.
Nizar.
Now, when I met you, you were Nick, and Nick kind of got phased out. Where did that all come from? I've always wanted to ask you that. I don't know why I'm doing it now on like a public forum, but like, I remember you were Nick, and then Nick kind of went away, and Nizar came in.
Well, yeah, this was all because when I was working security downtown, my boss, his name was Ross at the time, who's a complete moron. He had, like, my first name is five letters, you know, N-I-Z-A-R. He couldn't spell that, and he couldn't pronounce it.
Get out.
Yeah. So he'd be like, N-I, and I'd be like, Zed, and then he'd be like, he'd like freeze, and then he'd be like, what was that again? I'm like, N-I-Z-A-R. And then he's like, he typed like two more letters, and then he just looked at me, and I was like, just call me Nick, like, whatever, you know? Oh, and then
funny.
People at work were calling me Nick, and then basically because of Patrick, he came, you know, and introduced me to everybody as Nick, so it kind of stuck. And then after a while, I just started telling people my real name, and they didn't have any troubles doing it, so... So yeah, Nick kind of got, I think grandma's the only one that calls me Nick nowadays.
Oh yeah. She's getting old, you know? So how long did you train before you had the first match?
Quite a while, because there was never any room for me, you know? So I was basically.
We did, like, when you first started coming around, there was, I mean, even now still, but like there was a very stacked roster.
Oh yeah. There was like over 25 guys at the time when I was there. And so I just would do security. And if somebody, you know, couldn't make it, I would, if, you know, fill in their spot if I was able to. But I trained probably for about like 2 years.
Wow.
Maybe not as much. It felt like 2 years, but because like I started at the Extreme Zone and then just, you know, it was pretty unorganized with the trainers and stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, every now and then, like, Marky would show up quite often. Tex was, you know, here and there. And then Grizz would show up every now and then, too. But these guys have lives and stuff. So,
yeah.
I remember one time Red Thunder came down and watched us for a bit and trained us for a bit. And then he asked me if I would like to come to his acreage and wrestle, because he's got a ring in his backyard. Mm-hmm. So me and Patrick would go every Saturday and Sunday.
I know, and he back in the day, he helped do a lot of training, and a lot of the guys spoke very highly of his training.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Patrick, like, pretty much, like, that's the only reason why I'm here, you know. He showed me how to do stuff.
It's his fault.
Told me, yeah, you could blame him, send all your hate mail towards him. So, but yeah, he helped me out a lot, and we'd just talk and talk, because, like, you know, we were working night shift at a mall doing security, so we had nothing going on except for watching homeless people do homeless stuff. So yeah, and it was a lot of fun. And then, you know, I lived in on the mean streets of LA at the time, so I would,
Lamont, Alberta. Attaboy.
So I would drive and pick up Patrick, and then I'd drive out to, it was in between what was known as Hobima and Wetaskiwin. I think it's called Muscatchees now.
Masquatchees, I believe it's called.
Masquatchees, yeah. So we'd go out there and we'd train for hours. And, you know, he was really cool about it, Thunder was, because, like, he worked, you know, he's a firefighter in his off time. So he would work all night long. And then he would wait for me and Patrick to show up. He would wrestle for a, like, you know, 4 or 5 hours with us, and then do the same thing the next day. And then, you know, he was like that every weekend. He was like that.
Yeah, I think Red Thunder is very much a kind of an unsung hero of the Alberta wrestling scene for a lot of years.
Yeah, no, he is. And, like, man, he showed me a lot. And, you know, I feel like I was half trained when I first started wrestling. And then it was kind of just learning on the job kind of thing. And then me and Michael would go to a bunch of training seminars and stuff, and I would just slowly get better and better.
Yeah. Who was the first match?
Well, my first match.
I feel like I should know this, but I don't.
Well, I have two. I can't remember which one I did first, though. But these two stick out in my head. There was back when Drew Dalby was the manager of whatever he was called back then.
Team Esteem.
Yeah.
Whatever he was called.
Yeah. He was doing this like Dolby challenge where he would, you know, fight a referee, fight this person, fight that.
Oh, right.
And so they needed a guy just to get beat up. And they came to me and I was like, they asked me, and I was like, yeah, sure, but I don't have any gear. And Kurt didn't want my face to be seen. So I had a mask, which was like a pink wrestling mask with a white outline around the eyes and nose and mouth. But he had a mustache, and the mustache curled up and turned into his eyebrows.
Okay.
And then I was like, well, what should I wear? And King Dusty Adonis pulls out this metallic rainbow black onesie.
Well, that sounds like King Dusty.
Well, and I was like, man, what the hell is this? And he's like, oh, it's a Chinese sex suit. And so I was like, okay. And then, you know, he bought it to fit him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little taller than Dusty.
Yeah.
And I put it on, and it came with a hood. So I wore the mask, and I put the hood over my head because it would only cover like just the top of my head, because
mm-hmm.
I couldn't get the zipper, which was in the front, all the way up.
Oh, God.
And so I was kind of hunched over and whatever. And then somebody's like, you look like a speed skater. And I was like,
I can picture it in my head now.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, like whatever.
Is there a video of this anywhere?
I don't know. Buried in the, it was a show done at Nate's. So I know it was on video. I just couldn't tell you where, when it was done. I got some
digging to do now. Anyway.
And yeah. So they called me the El Luchador.
Right. I remember this now.
The fastest wrestler on ice.
Luchador. Oh, God. I got to find this now.
And then I was like, well, what if my suit rips? And like, whatever rips, just flex that body part. I'm like, okay.
There you go.
And then my other match that I remember doing, it was me and Cam versus Big Jess and Stevie.
Mm.
And it was a tag match out in some rinky-dink small town. I can't remember where it was. But, and then Slammer had this golden black jacket that he had made, and it had SL on it, and he didn't know what to do with it because like it didn't match any of his gear, and he couldn't fit it, I think, at the time. And so he's like, here, wear this. And then they're like, what are we gonna call you? And I was like, I don't know. And they're like, well, what are some of your nicknames? And
oh God,
it was fun. It's funny because it actually worked out, but in high school they would call me Spoony Love.
I was wondering where that came from, because that used to be like your email and your Twitter and shit back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. And then it worked out because the jacket said SL. Oh, right, so right. You know, it's kind of, that's what I did. And me and Cam wrestled, and we beat Big Jess and Stevie.
And the rest is history, right?
And yeah, I guess you could say that.
All right, we're going to go to your first track. As everybody knows who is a giant fan of this program, I have my guests pick out a couple of songs that they enjoy. The first one we're going to get to is a song called Pride, and the artist is Kevin Gates. Tell me about this song. I know nothing about Kevin Gates. Tell me about this song and why you picked it, and don't just be like, I like it.
Well, I picked it because I like it. But no, when I first heard it, I didn't really like it. And then I listened to it a couple times. And then, I don't know. It's one of those songs where it's like, he's like a gangster rapper, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's not like a gangster rap song or whatever. It's one of those songs where he's kind of, he opens up his life to the world, basically. And okay. I just like it because he's telling you how much like he misses this girl and how much the breakup between him and her affected him. and how his life was, you know, gone to shit, and how vulnerable he was in the song, and then how he, in the end, you know, meets up with her again, and I don't know if they're together or not, whatever, but I just like how...
That's interesting subject for like a gangster rapper, though. They don't really usually talk about feelings, you know?
It's, yeah, so he just shows his vulnerability, but it's, I think it's a great song. I can listen to it all day on repeat for forever, really. And I don't know, I just like it, and it's just, you don't really see too much of that, at least you didn't before.
Yeah. All right, well, we're gonna throw to that, sorry to cut you off, we're gonna throw to that song. This is Kevin Gates on the Punk and Pod Evers podcast.
For real. When you're alone at night and need somebody by your side, no matter wrong or right, saying it's gonna be all right, no one to hold you tight. Some say this don't exist. Emotions captured out there. If you ain't care who you was with, in your apartment off a secret, had a brief disagreement. You moved back to Houston. We went like 3 years without speaking. I got back on drugs bad while I was still chasing jelly. My heart was broke, suffered, stressed, battled with my depression. On top of that, my team was shitting on me harder than ever. Not a worry in a world whenever we was together. I flew you out to Miami. We laid up in the suites, bathtub full of fruits while I was rubbing your feet. We went to Bloomingdale's. I bought a matching Great Theory sweater. Said I ain't want you to leave before you bought it to jail. Transmission, further Porsche reminiscing, wishing that you was here with me. I used to tease you about your feet. We were laughing, we giggling, having breakfast on the beach. You don't know how much that meant to me. Holding hands and having to remind public affection. With you and me, don't need nobody. God, I'm your protector. FaceTime, and I can't wait until you call me. You special, you had that problem. Now that problem solved, you won't disrespect you. I'm not there. To feel it back, find no more love you like I. Hope our love ain't expired. Trying to figure out why he dying on the inside. One day I'll get over my pride.
Kevin Gates, that is Pride on the Punk and Proud Evers podcast. I am Big Bad Boris, joined by good old Sheik Akbar Shabazz. Now, I want to talk to you about something that I think is kind of cool that you got to do a number of years ago. You and the aforementioned Hollywood Dusty Adonis were involved in a short documentary film.
Yeah.
So tell me how that all kind of came about and what you thought of the finished product. Cause I always thought it was really cool and interesting the way that they filmed his life and your life and how it all came together. I thought it was really good. Plus I'm in it. So I liked it.
Yeah. Well, originally it was supposed to be a thing for like all the PW or not all, but most PWA guys.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wanted to kind of do this behind the scenes wrestling show. Because these two guys, one guy's Kurt Spenrath, and I can't remember the other guy. But
yeah, I remember it started off as something different than what it ended up being.
Yeah, and then they wanted to do so much, but then there was not enough time. And then, you know, it is a bit of a hassle to like meet up with these guys and do all the stuff that they wanted to do, just because like they were very, I don't know, like, it was a little unorganized, right? Because it would be like, hey, can you meet us here tomorrow kind of thing. You're like, oh, no, I got stuff to do, or you'd have to cancel your plans to make it for that thing. And originally, like, what they wanted to do is they went to the producers in Toronto and they're like, hey, we want to tell this story. Finally, eventually, like, they just decided to do it with me and Dusty, because I don't know if we were the only ones that didn't give them any problems, or they just wanted a story because we were in a feud or what it was.
Yeah.
But they went to Toronto and they were like, hey, there's this independent wrestling company in Edmonton, and there's one guy who drives from Saskatchewan who trays a king and whatever and wrestles. And then there's this Muslim guy from a small town who portrays a sheik and whatever. And I guess the producers in Toronto were amazed that there was wrestling in Edmonton.
Because a lot of people are amazed there's wrestling in Edmonton.
Yeah, just because apparently, like, from what I was told, they thought that there's nothing but farmers and hockey players and rig pigs in Alberta, you know what I mean? Like, they had no idea any of this was going on. So, yeah, so we filmed a documentary. Some of it was, you could tell, like, my parts were awkward, because, like, at the time, I wasn't used to, you know, being in front of a camera or talking. Like, I know what to say when I'm at a wrestling show as the sheep, because I'm either the most annoying guy you'll ever see that you want to get punched in the face, or
it's easy to be chic in front of the camera, but I think sometimes it's hard to be Nizar in front of the camera, you know?
Yeah, well, just because, like, I feel like I'm a pretty boring guy. I don't really do too much, so it's just...
Well, you told me when I asked you if you wanted to be on this, you're like, well, either if I'm not at work, I'm at home getting high and playing video games, so my schedule is pretty open.
Pretty much, I hang out with my two cats.
There you go.
Yeah. But yeah, so we did that, and then like my family was there. My dad's like a very private guy, so he didn't want to be on camera, but they wanted to get his take on things. And my dad, like, I mean, you know, well, my dad's really old, so he's been around, and he's from Lebanon, so yeah. he's seen all that happens there. And then, you know, in the 70s and 80s here, and you know, things weren't easy, and just he was afraid that people had the same mentality about wrestling and people's ethnic backgrounds as they did back in the day. So my dad was always worried, and he would always ask me, he's like, well, what if somebody tries to attack you? And I was like, well, then they attack me. Like, what am I going to do? Like, I can't stop them, but I can't stop them from attacking me, but I can stop them from doing anything to me.
Yeah.
You know,
when I was interviewed for they did an interview with a bunch of people for it. And like, I know they cut a lot of that out, because it was only like, what, 15 minutes. It was a very short film, but I remember they interviewed me and talked about it, and they were asking if it was like, if it was a race thing between you and Dusty, or they kind of hinted around at that. And I was like, I don't think it's a race thing. It's more, to me, it's more of a class thing, just in terms of you think that you're better than this guy. Cause I don't think he was the king at that point. He was just Dusty Adonis, and you were talking like he was a peasant and you were more important than him. And I very much downplayed that it was a race thing, cause to me, it was always like a class thing. Like, you thought you were, you know, higher above, and you always used to talk about sleeping in your room with the ceiling of gold with all the ladies, and talking about how you were better than him. And that's what I thought it was about. And that's what I explained, but that never made it into the only part of mine that ended up in it was me yelling at you not to swear during your promo.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the very first scene in the whole thing.
It is the very first scene. And it's funny, cause I forgot that even happened, but it's like, it worked so well. But yeah, what they tried to do basically was create some kind of controversy and drama just to make it more appealing. Like, they would ask my dad questions, kind of trying to, like, get him to be frustrated and kind of not yell at me, but just, you know, maybe chew my ear off kind of thing. And they're always just,
because wasn't there a scene where, sorry to interrupt you, wasn't there a scene in it where you guys were sitting down for dinner or something? And
Yeah. So they were, you know, just trying to think of stuff to bring up that would kind of like upset my dad. But then, like, my dad wasn't going to, even if my dad was at his maddest, you wouldn't know, because he would just brush it off, and then he'd probably just tell them to leave politely, kind of thing. But they did that. They interviewed my oldest sister, and, you know, same thing. She was just, I don't think they fully understand. I don't think anybody in my family like fully understands wrestling. They just kind of see what's on TV and that's it. And, you know, she was also worried because, you know, I'm a heel. I'm a chic, an ethnic heel, whatever. And I was portraying a stereotype, but the fans know, you know, when the show is done, you know, the chic goes back into the trunk of my car. I'm not him, you know what I mean? So I could easily separate myself from it. But to them, and like, you know, the fans would come up to me and tell me how much they liked it and whatever. And they tell me like, they love to hate me and just, you know, whatever. So I wasn't ever worried about it.
Were you happy with the final cut of the film, the movie, whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, they played it for me and Dusty. And like, honestly, like, I didn't think it would be as funny as it was. And I liked it. I thought they did very well with it. And, you know, they sent it around to a bunch of different film festivals, and it got a lot of awards, and they won them quite a bit of money and stuff. So,
did you get any money?
I feel like it did very well. I think I got some, but I can't remember.
You probably,
it was done in like 2012.
Yeah, it's a long time ago. You probably spent it on weed anyway. Okay, two other things I want to talk about. tell me really, really quickly how cool it was for you to get a chance to do a little bit of work with the Iron Sheik when he was here.
You know what? It's funny. It was really cool because I remember watching his YouTube videos and seeing how crazy he was. And then I remember him as a kid watching him. And then he's standing right in front of me. And he's just, you know, this happy old guy, you know, sadly his body is breaking down or whatever, but he was so happy and just thankful to be there, and it was awesome. And I actually spent the 3-4 days with him the whole time, and it was just really, really cool. And just talking to him, and you know, we did the little promo thing and he slapped me in the face. And then the funny thing was, because like, he slapped me and I fell down to the floor, and then we go to the back and he's like, Bubba, I don't hit you too hard, huh? And I was like, no, you're good, you're good. He's like, oh, he's like, very good, so thank you very much.
Yeah, like, we tried to treat him well, and he was good.
Yeah. So, and then like the worst thing was, well, before this, we were checking him in a hotel in Calgary, and there was a wedding at the hotel, and this guy and his wife come out, and the guy looks and he's like, holy shit, you're the Iron Sheik. And he's like, yeah, Bubba. And then he's like, can I get a picture? And he's like, oh, of course, of course. And then they took pictures and whatever. But then I took him to his hotel room, and I was saying goodbye because, you know, I had to drive back to Edmonton. And he was sitting in his hotel room, and he just said, you know, thank you very much, I really appreciate it. And he gave me a hug and kissed me on the cheek, and he was starting to tear up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was just like if I could, I would have hung out with that guy all night long, you know. But
he's
just one of those people that, yeah,
at the cut, because we did three shows. That was that was one of a really fun weekend for us, because we did three shows that weekend. We did Calgary, Red Deer, and Edmonton, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And at the Calgary show, I stopped on the way to the venue. We stopped and I grabbed a few beers, and I waited until he was in that little back, like, we used to call it Kurt's office, that little back room there. And I waited till he was by himself. And I know that, you know, he likes a cold beer. So I took him a cold beer and I gave it to him. And he said, oh, thank you, God bless you, Bubba. And I had my little moment, and it was really cool. So he was a lot of fun to work with. Bushwhacker Luke, also really, really great to work with. I actually got to drive him around a little bit, and it was super, super cool. Before we go to your next song, I want to talk to you and get your take on the now infamous Clandestine Society Act One death match. We had Colton Kelly on a little while ago to get his kind of take on it, and I want to kind of get yours. because when I first heard that you were going to do it, I was very, very surprised that you were into it. So I want to know how your involvement in that all came about and your thoughts on how it all turned out.
Well, what made you surprised that I was going to do it?
Just it's very risky, very violent. And, I mean, we don't do those things around here very often, if at all, to that, you know, to that extent of violence. So I mean, maybe I was mistaken to think you wouldn't be into it, but yeah, I was just surprised that you'd be into it.
Well, okay. So what happened was Michael texted me.
Michael Richard Blaze.
Michael Richard Blaze. And he was like, hey, he's like, so I'm going to do this underground show. It's kind of like a party and there's wrestling involved and we're going to invite people and it's like, bring your own booze. And then after the show, we'll just party with the fans and whatever. And I was like, okay. And he's like, but I need a crazy main event. And I was like, okay. And then he's like, would you want to do a death match with, he was either saying, let me, it was either Mattia or I think it was Mattia.
Colton Kelly.
Or Colton Kelly. And or Evan Adams, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, and at the time I was like, yeah, sure.
Okay.
And then you know, as the weeks went on by, the rest of the matches were announced and whatever. And then I remember he comes up to me, he's like, okay, so Evan Adams flew himself out here. Because it was like just the show where, you know, people were invited and if they want to give money, they can and whatever. But like, you know, people ended up like paying and stuff, whatever, in the end, but they didn't have to. And he's like, okay, so it's going to be Evan Adams and Mattia in the main event, and I'll just put you in like the scramble clusterfuck thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, thinking about it, and I was like, what happened to the main event? And he's like, oh, well, I don't know. I just didn't think you'd want to do it because I didn't say anything. And at the time, I was kind of going back and forth in my mind about it because I'd see all the stupid stuff on YouTube and whatever. But then I thought, you know what, like, Colton Kelly, you know, he's not an idiot or whatever, and neither is Evan Adams. So these guys aren't going to just start carving our faces up and whatever. And so I was like, you know, I was like, I'll do it. And he's like, okay. He's like, are you sure? And I was like, yep. And then when Evan Adams was telling us the grocery list of weapons he wanted, I was like, man, like maybe this isn't such a good idea. Like, man, he was crazy. He wanted to get all this stuff, including a forklift. And I'm like, where are we going to, like, what are we going to do with all this stuff? You know? And
a forklift.
Yeah, I have no idea what he had planned for that, but
I should have him on just to have his take on it as well.
Yeah.
Anyway,
well, here's the thing. He was talking about all this like stuff about the death match in the back before we went out, and I was like, "How many?" And it sounded like he's had a lot of experience. So I was like, "How many of these have you done?" And he's like, "Oh, this is my first one." And he's like, you? And I was like, this is my first one. I was like, I thought you'd done this before.
See, because I heard that story as well. And yeah. I was under the impression that he had done them before as well.
Yeah.
And I even mentioned, and I didn't hear it till after, because I believe I mentioned on commentary that he was like a deathmatch veteran, because I was under the impression that he had done them as well. And I had heard that story that you just said. And I was like, oh, shit, I had no idea that was his first one.
Yeah. And then so we were going over it, and I was like, kind of nervous about the light tubes. Mm-hmm. Just because I've never been hit by one before or whatever. So I was like thinking about it, and then I was like, do you guys want to just hit each other in the head with light tubes first thing, so we get it over with? And they're like, yeah, that's a good idea.
And that's what Colton Kelly, sorry, I don't mean to keep cutting you off, I just want to throw my two cents in there, because that's what Colton Kelly said too. He was like, once I got the first one and kind of knew how it felt and just kind of understand it, you know, yeah, he liked that kind of thing right off the bat. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
Yeah. So I remember, I can't remember. I think it may have been Colm Kelly who hit me in the head with it. But like, Evan Adams has hair. Colton Kelly has a lot of hair. I don't have any. And as soon as he hit me, I could just feel blood dripping down my head. And then I was like, okay, that wasn't so bad. Like, mm-hmm. It was, you know, pretty, it didn't really feel like anything. So then we just, you know, kept going and started wrestling. And a lot of it, I don't even like, we were just doing our thing and just doing whatever. We didn't talk about it. We didn't anything. We just went in there and just started beating on each other. There was a couple spots that we did call. But then I remember he was like on his knees, and me and Colton Kelly had a bunch of light tubes and whatever. And Colton smashed him on his back, and I smashed him on his stomach or his chest. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think like it would be as bad as it was, but once the glass kind of fell and a little bit of dust settled, like his body was messed up.
Yeah, he bled a lot. It was
a lot.
Like, respectful to, you know, the safety and stuff, it was a really cool visual. It looked really good, but yeah, he was leaking.
Yeah, and then like the thing, there's three things that hurt me the most in that match. Well, maybe four. When he smashed me in the head with the keyboard, I thought, like, I had this vision in my head where he's just going to hit me in the head with the keyboard. Keys are going to fly everywhere. Everybody's going to, like, love it just because, you know, destruction and guys getting hit. He smashed me in the head with that thing, and maybe two keys flew out.
Yeah, I think you got to loosen him up in advance. You got to kind of gimmick it up a little bit.
Yeah, and that really hurt because I didn't put my hands up or try to protect myself. Mm-hmm. And then, surprisingly, the vinyl records hurt a lot.
Really? I was going to ask you about that, actually.
Yeah. Because, like, if you don't hit it with enough force, it won't break.
Oh, you're just getting smacked with it.
And there's a couple times where I hit Evan Adams, and they didn't break, and I felt bad because, like, I know how it felt. And then I remember I chokeslammed Thaddeus Archer onto the board
onto the barbed wire, yeah.
Barbed wire, which like it looked like it sucked, like a lot. But and then, you know, I was facing you guys in the camera, and then when I can't remember who hit me with the kendo stick with the light tube on it, but it split me in half, and it hurt so bad because it smashed both my arms and my mm-hmm. back, mm-hmm. and I got two deep cuts on my arms from it. And, you know, I fell down, and it was just like, it took my breath away. And then the last thing that like killed me, which thank God it was the last move I was taking, was the power bomb off the top onto the ladder with light tubes on it.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the ladder, the light tubes broke, the ladder bent in a V. And then I slid slowly off it. Ugh. So I started kicking just to kind of see if I could lift myself off, and it hurt like hell.
Yeah.
But as I'm sliding down, like I could just feel the glass ripping my back, and then my pants started coming down. So I had cuts on my ass. And, and then I just rolled out of the ring, and I was like, fuck this. And then as soon as I fall to the floor and I land on my knees and I get up, and I look up to see what's happening in the ring. And then that's when that camera guy from BC took that one picture of me that everybody seems to like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you glad you did it?
You know what? I am glad I did it. I'd do it again, honestly.
I was going to be my next question. I was like, it's super, definitely memorable and definitely talked about. I was going to ask you if you would do it. Like, not a regular thing, but you would do it again.
I would do it again. Yeah. Cause like in the back, when we were talking, I was talking to the guys, I was like, look, I know it's a death match, but I still want it to be a wrestling match. I don't mm-hmm. want it to be like, you hit me, I hit him. And then, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So what little psychology we put in the match, I mean, I don't know if people liked it or not, but I know they liked the violence. So, you know, as long as they were happy, but when it was all said and done, like it wasn't bad. Cause like the pain is like barely temporary, but you know, I was stiff for a few days, but besides that, like I was perfectly fine. And I didn't want to go ultra violent like you see in the States and whatever, because I didn't want to, you know, there's a point where it's just too much blood or too much stuff happening. And, you know, like I'm pretty sure we all have jobs to get to on Monday, so I didn't want to look like I just came out of a riot.
I heard you were picking glass out of yourself for quite a while, though.
Yeah, I was standing in my kitchen. My back was itchy for a few days, so I kept scratching it, and then all of a sudden something fell in my hand, and I looked, and it was a piece of glass. And then I found another piece of glass, like, deep in my back, and this is how... whatever, this is how stupid I am. So I'm trying to get this thing out of my back, but I can't reach it. So I grabbed this banana knife, which is basically a knife with a hook on it. Mm-hmm. And I was in the bathroom mirror and I was cutting my back trying to get to the piece of glass. So then I told my little sister to grab some tweezers, and she came and she was like too horrified to help me out. So I was like, okay. And then the only other person I could think of that would help me was my ex-girlfriend, and she works at a vet clinic. So I go to this vet clinic, and I totally like total Trailer Park Boys style. I go to this vet clinic to get her to help me, and even she wouldn't do it though. But so the next day I kind of let it heal a little, and then I took the knife and I just dug in there real deep and ended up finding the glass. And then the last piece I found, I was scratching my elbow and I could feel it. So I just kept picking at it and picking at it. And then it kept slipping farther and farther down. So I thought I'd go to the doctor to get it removed. And he wanted to like get ultrasound and all this stuff, whatever, because he didn't want to hit a vein or whatever it was that it injured me. And then like 2 days later, I was sitting on my couch and I was just scratching my elbow and the tip of the glass came out of my arm. So I just kept scratching it and slowly pulled it out. And then I ended up pulling it out of my forearm.
That a boy.
And that was the last piece of glass that I found, but I may have more.
That you know of, yeah. Did anybody in your family see that match?
No, they did not.
Yeah, I had a feeling. What do you think? What do you think your mom would say?
Oh my God, my mom would have my mom would have whooped me with a belt and a spoon harder than those guys would have hit me. Yeah. You know, like, she doesn't like me wrestling at all. But then the funny thing was, because like my back was all cut up and I wanted the scars to heal, or at least scab over the blood to dry, so I didn't shower the next day, and my head was covered in blood and cuts and whatever. So I had my hoodie and whatever on, and my mom comes over and I'm laying on the couch and I forgot about it, and I took my hoodie off, like off my head, and she's seen it, and then she's like, what happened? I was like, oh yeah, I cut myself shaving.
Excellent. All right, we're gonna go to your second song now. I got to call you out on this one, because you told me that this song was by the RZA, but this song is actually by the GZA. Yeah. So this is Fame by the GZA. All I know about the GZA is he is a card-carrying member of the Wu-Tang Clan. Why'd you pick this one?
He's a founding member of the Wu-Tang Clan. I picked it because he's like one of the most brilliant, underrated rappers you'll ever hear. And I don't know if like it's not a popular song, but he uses celebrities' names the entire time that he's rapping, and he takes those names and he builds a story, and it's just incredibly smart. And I just think it's a great song. Like, I remember stumbling upon it like when I was in high school, and I just kept listening to it over the years. And it's just, you know, I would pick like a more popular song, but I want people to, you know, hear something that they haven't heard before.
No, and that's the whole point, I like to hear shit that you're into. That's the whole point, you know?
Yeah. And like, you know, he's got other songs. Like, he's got one called The Spark, where he talks about how life and space was created with the whatever. And he's just like, he's 100% accurate with everything that he says and whatever, and just he's so good at putting things together and whatever. And I just think he's incredibly underrated. And you know, because like when you think of Wu-Tang Clan, you know, you think Old Dirty Bastard, Method Man, you know, Raekwon, Ghostface, you know. So it's just, he's one of those guys that I don't think
Buddy Roberts and Michael Hayes. Oh wait, that's the free version. Yeah. Never mind.
I'm sure they could be in there too. There's a few.
All right. This is Fame. It's the Jizza on the Punk and Father Evers podcast.
They was told not to ride in Patty's hearse and stay out of Charles Mansion. Took Abraham's Lincoln through the Tar Bridge expansion. Willis reads a map that marked the spot showing. On his left, George burns a blunt, William Holden. Tara banked the money that Shaka Khan the poor. Alicia keyed his car for giving Melba more. For the Red Fox, she bought off the block but thought twice as Deborah Cox the gun cause she beat Kelly's price when Rosa parked the truck on the farm in Kim Fields. Linda tripped for trying to walk in Lawrence Hills. Water dripped out of Ferris Fawcett in the glass. She was super fly, Curtis May fill her ass. Chris Tucker to a show, Ted Turner to a hoe. Robert Dix the beat, but ain't feeling the flow. But he signed fast for half of Johnny's cash. Nia Long for the album to drop. Cameras flash, Tom Sawyer at the Lucille Ball up in the foyer. He confronted Richard prior to hiring his lawyer. Shooks Knight removed the rook off the board. Don King was checked and Al Sharpton his sword.
Wetting cream, I ain't wetting fame. Fame is the measure. Place where stars are born. The Saints marched in, Curtis Blow, Lena's horn. Tom Cruise the boulevard, Chris Rock the song. For the 100th time, they pressed rewind to the beginning. They toast to the rhyme, the juice spilt on John's linen. They took it to Elizabeth, tell her to dry clean. The known seamstress who was scheming on Al's green. You know they shoot for the stars and buck wild. Like the kids in the yard who played with James Chow. A blue tissue lace, Erica's bad dude. Sean Combe through the evidence just to get a clue. The needle in the haystack from out of Earth is kid. Knew a tiger would kill him once thrown in Brad's pit. Jesse owing the money for the weed, Bubba Spark. Made his journey seem far as he walked in Dick Clark's. Jeffrey's line stuck with a thorn from George Bush. Paul pierced in the heart as the crowd pushed, acting alone. Drew Barrymore bones of the victims, three blocks from Jim's brownstone. They shared the same bowl, he caught Natalie's cold. The producer threw the butter on Esther's roll. Nipsey rustled him down, got his jaw wired. In an instant, Brooke Shields him from the gunfire. Angie stoned him to death with those vocals. Keep sweat from the workout just from running local. Wetting cream, I ain't wetting fame. Fame is the measure. Rap's a lab, man. Place where stars are born. Larry's bird flew out of Nicolas Cage. Joe text messages from Satchel's page. Betty write letters with ink from Sean's pen. Infinite bars, you couldn't tell where the song end. Glenn close enough to quickly dub the tapes. Richard Gere ripped while he was climbing Bill Gates. He was a southerner, posing as a native New Yorker. But Jason Kidd took his first steps in Jimmy's Walker. He stayed online, chatting with rap celebs. Used Bernie's Mac to search Veronica's web. It cost him their life for the advice she gave. Now Pete Rose lay on Vanessa's red grave. Wetting cream, I ain't wetting fame. Fame is the measure. Rap's a land, land. Place where stars are born. Wetting cream, I ain't wetting fame. Fame is the measure. Rap's a land, land. Place where stars are born.
The Jizza of the Wu-Tang Clan on the Punk and Father Evers podcast. I am Big Bad Boris with Sheik Akbar Shabazz. I've mentioned it many, many times on this podcast that a lot of the wrestlers that I know fall under two categories. Either they watch tons of wrestling or they watch no wrestling. I have a feeling you're on the no wrestling side. Do you watch a lot?
Yeah, not anymore. Not as much as I should probably. But it got to the point where I would watch it religiously, you know, and it just started to me. It just started becoming embarrassing to watch. And like when I'm by myself, it's a lot of it was cringeworthy, but like I could go get through it. But when I would watch it with somebody else and they would just like, I would see their face. Mm-hmm. And I would just sit there and watch like what was happening on TV. And it was, you know, like it was all the stupid stuff where it was like Hornswoggle was beating Chavo and whatever. And just, you know, all stuff like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Kind of once Eddie died, Eddie Guerrero passed away, I lost quite a bit of interest in it because he was my favorite. And then, I don't know, just I it would. I would get more annoyed at watching it than anything. And, you know, it's just like, if it bugs you that much, like, then stop watching it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I did. And then, but I like watching the older stuff. And I like
watching. That's what Pat said too. You actually said a lot of similar things as to what Pat said about Eddie and how he likes to watch some of the older stuff too.
Yeah. You know, and it's like I like the style nowadays of PWG and All Elite Wrestling style and the luchador stuff, whatever. It's just, you know, I can't do it. You know, I'm too fat to fly.
Not with that kind of attitude.
Well, it's just, you know, well, I'm, you know, it all comes down to me just being too lazy, you know, and I'm just too fat to fly. So I just do the style I have now. But now that my body is healed and it feels a lot better since we've had that break from the pandemic, I'm doing a little more stuff and whatever, but just, you know, it's, I don't know. I'd like to get to training and try new stuff and get my cardio up. It's just, things have been kind of hard for me lately and just working lots, and I just don't have too much time for it right now, but I'd like to make more time for it.
Any bookings coming up? Where can we see you perform, so to speak?
Right now, nowhere.
Oh, really? Nothing coming up?
I wrestled on Friday and Saturday, but I hurt my knee in Saskatchewan on Saturday and I could barely bend it right now. So I'm just going to take my time and letting it heal and stuff.
Saskatchewan, what company was that?
It was called BEW, which is Best Entertainment Wrestling. And it is from a guy, his name is Claude something. He lives in Saskatoon, I think, or Regina, and he's been putting on shows. Normally he does them in Red Deer, but he had this one in a town called Tisdale.
Okay. They treat you well?
So it treats me pretty good. I've been, since, like, you know, PWA isn't running right now, so I've been doing a lot of stuff for RCW. I made my Edmonton debut on Friday, so I'll probably just be wrestling for RCW whenever there's room for me and take other bookings, I guess, from like Claude and stuff. And I got a couple messages from a few people, but nothing concrete or get my hopes up about. So
Anything else that you want to add or tell people or want people to know about you, or any girls you want to go out with, or
honestly, I don't know, man. I don't know what to say. I just want to say thanks to everybody who comes out and supports us. You know, like, to me, it's crazy that people will pay to see me and, you know, other guys wrestle. When it's like, if it was me, I probably wouldn't pay to come watch me wrestle or whatever, just because, like, you know, like, money, like, everybody knows that going to work sucks. And people are very cheap with their money.
And there's a lot of options for your entertainment dollar, even through the pandemic. I mean, your internet connection, there's a zillion and one things that you can do for your money. So,
yeah. And just the fact that they'll come and they'll pay to watch us and support us and give us everything. And to me, it's just like, you know, like, I'm just some bum from a small town who moved to a city and learned to wrestle. And then I built this persona that people like, and it's just, it still blows my mind that people come and they cheer me, they boo me, they, you know, I know I'm not the only one that people come to see, but it's just, I just really appreciate everything that, you know, the fans do, you know, whether they make signs or throw stuff at me or, you know, talk shit. Like, I love it all. And, you know, like, especially, I just want to also thank Denise Carter, because she made me a bobblehead doll.
Oh, did she really?
That's, yeah, cool. And she gave it to me on her birthday, or it was her birthday weekend, and I wanted to give her something, but I forgot about it because I was in such a rush. So I gave her my glasses, and I gave her a hug, and, you know, and it's just,
the it's socks those are, fans.
it's those fans that keep coming back that, you know, or otherwise we would just be a bunch of guys wrestling in a ring.
In your underwear in front of nobody?
Entertaining a bunch of empty chairs in a wall.
Yeah. All right. Give us your social medias so if people want to follow you for all of your pontifications.
Okay. Well, Facebook is under my real name. That's Nizar Watfa. N-I-Z-A-R-W-A-T-F-A.
Sorry, can you spell that again? N-I what?
N-I, yeah.
See? That's a callback right there. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Don't quit your day job, Boris. Instagram, it's Sheik Shabazz. And I can't remember my Twitter, but I barely go on it. I just retweet wrestling and
cat. Your Twitter is at the Sheik Akbar, is what you're
there. We go.
See? Okay. Who's working then, for you?
There you go. And then today, because my buddy kept annoying me, I joined TikTok. And it's just Nizar Watfa.
On the old TikTok. Hey, cool. All right. Thanks, man. This has been a lot of fun. I think we learned some things. We shared some feelings.
Yeah, no problem, man.
You're welcome back here anytime. All right. We are going to go out to a track from the brand new Face to Face album. I didn't realize Face to Face had a brand new album until I was digging through the old Spotify the other day. So we're going to go out to Black Eye Specialist from the new Face to Face album. You can follow me at BBBORIS on the Twitter machine and BBBORIS1 on Instagram. Check out all the other great podcasts on the Backbreaker Media Network. And if you check out the Backbreaker Media Network, you can also check out that first Clandestine Society show featuring that crazy death match we were talking about. If you have not seen it and you'd like to, it is available for download or stream on the Backbreaker Media website. So yeah, check that out. Thank you again, Mr. Akbar Shabazz. Pardon me. This is Black Eye Specialist from the from Face to Face. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week.